I got stuff for you.
Holy moly.
I need to get some snakes and release them around my house.
But I love eating people. I love eating kids.
These guys are the scientists of the supernatural, lecturers leaving lessons for inquiring laymen. They are applying the scientific method to a world that baffles science. They are the cryptids of the corn.
Every day that you open your mouth,
I know, right?
I'm more convinced that you're abducted by aliens.
No.
And it just stood up. I mean, it just like kept going and going. And she goes, what the?
These are idiots.
I was laughing reading this because I already knew how you would feel.
Idiot. What part of the story fits your balloon?
Well,
this isn't a UFO. Yeah.
But who else has big black wings and red eyes?
Batman.
Well, Mothman.
Oh, yeah, Mothman.
Well, everyone, I think we know exactly what it is. So say it all with me. It was the Sandhill Crane.
Would you try it?
No.
You wouldn't eat it?
No.
Why?
Because they're probably toxic.
There'd be a lot of poop in my pants. Seeing a 6-foot alligator go swinging through the air and slam into a tree.
Welcome back to Cryptids of the Corn Podcast.
I thought you were going to do it because you...
Now you always go first.
I always speak first.
Well, and yeah.
You took that from me.
Well, it was...
So you say your name first.
That's out of order. It's just wrong.
Go ahead.
I'm Mr. E.
And I'm J Clone 57.
Sound different.
All right. Sound so today fatter. we're going to...
Sound fatter.
Me? Wait, what? Now I'm confused.
Good.
All right. Welcome back to the show, everybody. It's Wednesday.
Gosh. We're thinking about doing away with Wednesday episodes in season 9, so we'll see.
You think so?
We've talked about it. We talk about it every season, and then, yeah. Then they stay.
Well, I think we could shift our attention onto other things. You got any suggestions at home? Any other thoughts or ideas?
Read a bunch of creepypastas.
Something, I don't know.
We're going to talk today, though, about con rot. Now, I'm 99% sure it's pronounced con rot, because it's Vietnamese.
But go ahead and spell it.
It's R I with the weird apostrophe.
Wait, not R.
No, the rot part. Con okay. Is C-O-N.
Yeah, okay, there you go. C-O-N. Don't confuse.
And
confuse
then
them.
R, and then the I with a weird little dash, and then the T.
Okay.
So I think it's pretty, because it's Vietnamese, I think it's rot. Like rot, or R-O-T here.
Right.
But yeah, you ever heard of this thing?
I have not, the con rot.
Translates roughly to great sea centipede.
Ooh, okay, that sounds terrible.
It's a unique marine animal, generally viewed as quite large, 30 to 60 feet in length, with a relatively thin body. Its body has appeared to be segmented.
Okay.
Like think of a worm or a centipede or a millipede.
Centipede's what I picked in my head.
Displaying lateral projections that look like plates or fins. So at every meeting, there is a fin or a plate that comes out of the body section on each side.
Okay. Like a centipede, kind
look
of.
Look up Anomalocaris.
A what?
Anomalocaris.
Anomalocaris.
Mm-hmm. You'll see it. It looks like a shrimp.
Oh, gosh, I don't know how to...
It stick out from each side of it. The animal routinely sports what appears to be water vapor from the hairy noses or mouth area. But it looks like it has a bunch of hair on its face.
Okay.
And when it comes up to the surface, it goes, like a dolphins or sea lions or anything like that, or manatees.
Huh. Anomalocaris. It's all one word.
Anomalocaris, yeah.
Wow, okay.
One of Earth's first predators. We'll talk about that later. Hold on to that.
Okay.
Its visible breath is one of its diagnostic features of the kind of sea serpent it is. Zoologist Bernard Heuvelmann called this type of, basically, if you look in the book, and I've said this book a lot, The Field Guide to Lake Monsters, Sea Serpents, and Other Mysterious Denizens of the Deep.
Oh, yeah.
The book's sitting right behind me. That's where all this comes from. It's under the many-finned category.
Okay.
Conrot's not the only many-finned thing, but it's like the poster child for that category.
Gotcha. Okay.
It's noted that many lateral fins and segment jointed armor embodied dermal plaques. So where you look at like modern centipedes and modern millipedes don't have it. But if you look at stuff like Arthropleura, the dermal plaques are the things that hang off the body. So the extra armor that comes off.
Okay.
Where centipedes don't have it because they traded that for speed on land. They have a bunch of flesh in between their plates and where their legs come out. So they're much more flexible and they're fast. Millipedes have it a little bit, but it goes either straight down or even curled in now.
Mm.
So when they roll up, it locks onto the back of them.
Gotcha.
So
okay.
They make it a harder ball. While Arthropleura was not a millipede or a centipede, it's the ancestor regrouped to both. So you have Bernard Hovelman called the many fin types, you know, lateral fins and segmented jointed army, bony dermal plates, were common among Arctic whales, ancient whales. Basically, this look. The multiple fin structures have been reported in a variety of configurations. Hovelman pointed out that the rigid nature of the animal's body causes the fins to be seeming from different angles as the animal turns radically.
Okay.
So the armor plates are causing the armor plates themselves are pretty rigid.
Mm-hmm.
So all these people are describing the animal looking different with these plates.
When they see it, yeah.
But Bernard Hovelman thinks it was because of the way that the ridge and it would turn, that you were getting different angles
and
of a very hard-bodied animal.
Seeing different shapes out of it, yeah.
Because of the animal's movement, therefore, these triangular fins can give the appearance of massive jagged crest, as if the cryptid is swimming on its side. So if it's coming up and you see it, like it looks like many dorsal fins.
Yes.
It's actually the dermal plates.
On the side of it.
On the side of it.
Okay, that makes sense.
A lot of people have renamed Hovelman's many finned serpent to great sea centipedes.
Hmm. I mean, it's kind of what they kind of fit that description or the body type.
Mm-hmm. Range. Hovelman's research said this type is almost only found in the belt of the tropics and subtropical waters around the world, where some of the world's warmest waters are. You don't see them outside of that.
Okay.
So this would point away from a large cetacean.
Okay.
So we've talked about whales a lot on this show. Most extremely large whales don't like the tropical sea.
Okay.
It's too hot. They'll cross it and stuff like that, depending on the species. Like, there's northern right whales and southern right whales that don't make the cross anymore. They're separate species now because the central line of the equator is just too hot for them.
They don't like it at all.
Yeah. That makes a lot of whales sick. That's where ambergris comes from, is whale vomit.
Oh, okay.
So that transfer literally upsets their stomach and they'll regurgitate like food matter.
Interesting. Okay.
But yeah. So I like pointing that out when you start talking about a really large animal and people start pointing out whales. It's not an area. Whales are there. It's not an area whales like to hang out. Most species of whale. Humpbacks. There's a lot of humpbacks in this area. But yeah. A close study of the distribution of sightings of this creature appears to demonstrate a really restricted range for the tropical marine species. From Asia to Arabia at 15 degrees north to 15 degrees south near Madagascar. With only a few reports coming out of this normal range.
Okay.
So the group of sightings is very, very specific. They even have lateral lines to determine where it happens, which is very common for other species. So this is where you start seeing some of Hovelman's zoology
take place. Yeah.
And this is kind of what we talk about with, like, if you just get rid of the word Bigfoot and you look at it as large mammal, get rid of, you know, whatever.
Get rid of the crypto part of it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, a specific well-documented population, though, has historically been reported in the South China Sea off of old Inkyo, China, east of the Gulf of Aden. Reports of Madagascar to the south and sightings in the Mediterranean Sea reinforce the reconstruction of this type of world's warmer marine environments.
Mm.
So they even got it nailed down to like little cluster spots where they're seen a lot.
Okay.
But yeah, I wish Hovelman was still alive.
That would be nice. That would be a good interview.
The first modern discussion of these animals took place in the 6th century work, La Nostre Histoire Entière de Poissons, by the father of ichthyology, Guillaume Rabelais. I don't know.
Oh, you're going to get torched for that.
I don't care. I'm so sick.
I'm just messing with you.
What he called a cetacean centipede.
Okay. So some kind of, I don't know.
which is a whale that had a multitude of feet or oars.
I was just saying a dolphin centipede thing. I don't know.
Because cetaceans, which were frequently seen in the Indies, stated Rabutila. I don't know how to say his name. Rabutila.
Okay.
Ron DeLuta was first described in his Nature of Animals in 200 AD.
Oh, wow. Okay.
That's his book.
Pretty old.
As a great sea serpent. So he was seeing something with the whales that he was calling a great sea centipede, or not great sea serpent, great sea centipede. The witness described it as a lobster-like tail and hairs for its large nostrils, which sounds like Trunco.
Yeah, it kind of does.
Though the legacy of the great sea centipede is centered around the South China Sea, sightings in other parts of the world give hints to earlier, more widespread distributions of this type of monster. One detailed record of the sighting noted by Illustration London News. It came from a letter from Edmund J. Wheeler, who quoted in a logbook of his company's ship, which was named the Princess, recently returning from China. He was going south around Africa, latitude 34 degrees, 56 degrees south, longitude 18 degrees, 14 degrees east. Captain Theramine saw an extremely large fish that had the head of a walrus, 12 fins, 6 on each side, and a great tail, and some 20 or 30 feet in length. So real bristly nose.
Yeah.
Bunch of fins, and then a big wide tail.
Hmm.
It was sporting something from its mouth. So not only did it have these bristles on its face, it had something hanging down from its mouth.
Okay.
So you get some Trunco vibes, that little trunk that Trunco had.
Like a pinniped.
Also, you get some Anomalocaris vibes. Because if you look at the feeding apparatus, they had a bunch of, like, not hair, but basically spines on it. And then there were some cousins of Anomalocaris that were giant filter feeders of their day.
Hmm.
They had giant piles of these things on their faces that they would run through the water.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Now, they've been extinct for a really, really long time, but we'll come back to them.
Anomalocaris?
Yeah. Their whole lineage is supposedly gone.
Supposedly.
The older I get, the more I start believing in, like, time slips and how time's an illusion and nonlinear. And
well, that, I mean, coelacanths.
Yeah, so I agree. Coelacanths disappeared from the fossil record for 67 million years and bounced back off the coast of Madagascar, where this guy's seen.
Oh.
No, it just was.
I mean, it's quinkadink, right?
Yeah. The princess crew fired on it and felt that they had hit it in the head.
Nice.
This all took place at 1 p.m. on July 8th of 1856. Commander Hugh L. Pearson, captain of the Royal Yacht, and Lieutenant W.P. Hannes, both on the HMS Osborne, cited that in the original report to the Admiralty that they had seen a sea monster, but not like the sea serpents that they see off of Cote Vinto. So this is also cool to see that they see sea serpents kind of...
regularly, mm-hmm. I guess. Enough to where it's not like a wild thing to see.
But they're like, it's not the normal sea serpent we've seen.
Yeah.
Near the northern coast of Sicily. This is in the Mediterranean. On May 2nd of 1877, remarkably, it displayed long rows of fins over 30 feet long, which appear to have been sticking out of the side of the animal rather than on its back. The sea serpent are sometimes described as, where like, so he's talking about the sea serpents have multiple humps on their back.
Yeah.
So at first they're like, oh, that's what it is. They're like, no, it's a side that we're seeing. This certainly appears to be the case because the gentleman grew closer to the creature. It showed its head was smoothness down its back, like that of a seal, and front large flippers. So its first pair were extra flippers. Large.
Yeah.
The next year, another sighting followed in which a witness told the investigators that they saw what it looked exactly like it had been seen on the Osborne. In December of 1878, an English woman named Mrs. Turner was aboard of the P&O liner, anchored off of the Suez, or Alden, which is the Gulf of Alden, when she saw a creature. She relayed her experience to Robert P. George, who subsequently wrote a letter to a biologist, Antoon. I'm not even trying to pronounce his last name. Of what she had saw, It was a mere 150 feet away, was a strange animal, was motionlessly laying on the surface. Greg replied that she saw both its head and 7 or 8 sets of fins on its back, all at the same time in a line. She cannot remember exactly how many dorsal fins there were, but they were large, slightly curved back, and none of them were the exact same size.
Hmm.
The head looked 4 to 6 feet in diameter, with a large, like a large tree trunk. The color was nearly black like a whale. The whole length appeared considerable, perhaps as long as an ordinary tree, or even moderate ship-sized. Both sightings of these great sea centipedes are tied to Indochina. The excellent records of French keeping sightings in the 1890s throughout the 1900s, as French and other ships were open to markets off of the South China Sea, they were starting to see them.
Okay.
Basically, there were good sightings of these creatures. I'll give you the years. 1893, 1896, 1898, 1902, 1903, 1904, and 1908.
And we're just assuming they're all seeing the same type of creature.
These are specifically roughly this type of thing.
Yeah. And, you know, we covered everything from sea serpents to eels to sea snakes to creatures that were as big as, like, what was it, seen off the cruise boat or cruise liner?
Yeah, a Carnival Cruise Monster.
With a huge, weird, kind of head like this thing, kind of, but...
A Carnival Cruise Monster looked like a big Liopleurodon or Mosa.
Like a, okay.
Plesiosaur, sorry.
What's the one that had like the big, gosh, it was like a big mix between like an alligator head and like some, like maybe a dog head or a seal head?
Maybe that was it.
Was that it, the same one? Okay. Mm-hmm. Just the massive head with a big, massive body behind it, but yeah, I don't know. I mean, and then the one where they shot where they blow that one thing out of the water, was that one of the giant alligators?
Yes, that was the U-boat monster.
Okay.
It was a U-boat sunk, because U-boats at the time, when they would sink, when water would hit the boiler, they'd explode.
Gotcha, okay. So yeah, they launched that thing out of the water. I mean, we've, throughout history, I guess less and less today, there's not as many sea monsters sighted, but I mean, there were many.
There's also less whales sighted.
Yeah, 100%, exactly. The beak whales, you never see one ever again. I mean, we won't, unless we're extremely fortunate.
I'm going to tell you, if you see a beaked whale, you're probably dying in the next 20 minutes.
Fair.
You should not be near a beaked whale.
I mean, that one video, it came up to the surface. That was nuts.
It's like an omen of death.
Well, it's something.
It's like seeing the Grim Reaper wave at you across the street. Like,
but he looks so happy.
See you in 25 minutes.
Yeah. But I mean...
A bottlenose beaked whale is the one you're talking about.
Yeah, the bottlenose beak was Gerald's. Gerald. But yeah, like all those sightings of those, you know, creatures from the past, you know, we've seen them so much in the past that they were on the old maps, just very, I don't want to say just very common, but yeah, not so much today. But I wonder if this falls into any of those categories that they'd even seen back then, or if they were more common then, but they definitely seem less common now, whatever these things are.
If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door, no insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's FORHERS.com/women. FORHERS.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit FORHERS.com.
I don't know. It just makes me curious.
I think all sea monsters are on the downslope because all sea life is on the downslope.
Well, that's true, too. Yeah. Yeah. So the monsters are, too. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, sounds like it would be a good thing, but it's not.
No, okay. I mean,
less monsters, you know, in the water.
Yeah.
It's not good.
So let's talk about some options for this creature.
Okay.
So dermal plating, so plates in the skin.
Yeah.
It's not new to nature, specifically to fish.
Right.
Can you think of any fish that have dermal plating?
The alligator gar.
Good job.
Is that one?
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure there's, I mean, aren't scales just a form of?
So specifically, no, yes.
Okay.
Now, it depends, like, once again, that's cutting.
Right,
hairs. How far you want to go. Dermal plating is mostly bone.
Okay.
We're talking about this.
That is different. All
right. So like a sturgeon.
There you go. That's a good one.
They have dermal plating. Teleosuchi, which is the seahorses.
Oh, that was my second guess.
Like, have you ever felt a seahorse?
Oh, no.
They're really hard and spiny.
Huh.
Because they have a lot of like bone plating in their skin. They'll hold their shape. They're very rigid.
Yeah.
Very rigid animals. So yeah. And then the biggest group, there's one group of fish that is called the plated fish that no longer quote unquote exist.
Okay.
The placoderms.
Oh, okay.
Like Dunkyosaurus. Mm. The like, well, now they just shrunk it, you know, in size estimates. But the giant head that was just a guillotine.
Okay.
Like its whole head was armor plates, and just there was a bunch of armored fish from herbivores to carnivores and stuff like that, where they had these dermal ridges. They had crazy armor platings. There were several that actually had like spinal dermal ridges off their sides.
What are these called?
Placodons.
Placodons, okay.
Which do you, Placodomeria is that the family group?
Placodontia.
Just look up Dunky. Oh,
I found him.
Osculus.
Placoderms. Placodontia
is the scientific name, but their placoderms is their family group.
Okay.
But yeah. So placoderms. Some people suggest this is a surviving placoderm. The only thing that would be older than a placoderm would be like an Anomalocaris.
Okay. I don't know what that is.
Which, you know, you looked one up a second ago.
Oh, that thing. Sorry. And you see, the word I was just, let me hit back on my Google search and there it is.
So people suggest this is some kind of ancient placoderm. You know, it could be harmless. It could be a carnivore. There were some large ones. They got large. Most of them, why we think they went extinct is modern fish outcompeted them.
Okay.
That they were so heavy.
Yeah.
They were so slow, and they would move their mass, like their heavy bodies through the water.
Yeah.
That took so much more energy.
Oh, yeah, and too, like natural disaster and stuff with the ocean, I think, I would imagine could change, you know, pretty drastically with some of the stuff that happened in our past, like geological events.
And a lot of the big placoderms or shell, like why they had such oversized heads and crunching, was for heavily shelled or armored animals.
Okay.
So if the little armored animals started going extinct, the stuff they could catch.
Yeah.
And they replaced with fish that move really quick.
And they can't, hard to catch.
That's what they think also why like saber-tooth tigers and went extinct because they killed, like when all the megafauna went extinct, the big stuff they were made to hunt.
Yeah.
They couldn't catch deer. They couldn't catch, you know, little pigs.
Right, yeah.
Because they're just so much faster than them.
Yeah.
Hmm. So that's the first one people like throw out for this.
Okay.
What do you think of placoderms?
I mean, they were interesting. I'm more, the Anomalocaris though is, hey, I'd rather believe that. That seems more fitting. Even though it's old, but if you guys don't know what that is, please look up a picture of them. They look, I don't even know how to describe it. Like if a shrimp had, shrimp's not even like the best one, but it's close.
No, they are not even close related to shrimp.
No, if a shrimp, I'm just saying.
So it's like the Cambrian explosion.
Yeah, it looks like them, like everything from the Cambrian explosion, yeah.
Well, they're from the Cambrian.
Okay, that would just make
sense.
They're
the kings.
They're
often titled as, Anomalocaris specifically, is Earth's first apex predator.
Okay, it looks like the.
They were poster only like child three for. Or 4 feet long.
Yeah.
But when everything else is the size of your hand.
Yeah, that's pretty big.
Because they had a cousin, too, that was a filter feeder that was like 9 or 10 feet long.
Dang.
Which we think was at that time in Earth's history, you know, was the biggest thing.
Yeah, at the time,
It was the whales, because they had filter feeding apparatuses.
The whale of then.
Mm-hmm. And then Devonian after that.
Okay.
Is when fish ruled the planet.
Ah.
All right, you ready for the next one?
Yeah.
Like, some people even say seahorses, that this could be a giant seahorse.
Hmm.
That the odd, like, what, the odd plates.
What was that one seahorse we covered on Freaky Fauna Friday?
Leafy sea dragons.
Yeah, leafy sea dragons. So what's a big version of that?
I mean, it would look like a big pile of kelp. I don't know if you'd see a lot. Seahorses, evolutionary, are like closely related, like pipefish and those kind of things.
Yeah.
Which they don't move very fast either.
No, they don't.
So none of that's it. It's not a great one for me.
What if it's some kind of convergent thing, though? You know, it's.
Hold on to that.
Okay.
I have a little thing about convergent evolution.
And the seahorse family. Maybe.
I mean, it could be. To me, there's other candidate families that are better, like sturgeon.
More suited?
Like giant sturgeon.
Okay.
Giant fish that already have giant plates in their skin that can, depending on the species, be pointed out.
Okay.
And they're ocean going, and they're shy, and they get 25 feet long, and you don't see them very often.
You think the plates would be that big, that mistaken for fins?
It depends. So you're thinking like white sturgeon today is some of the big modern giants.
Yeah.
No. Because they start to wear down and get engulfed in skin and stuff like that.
Okay.
I'm trying to remember what it is, like pleated sturgeons, which are not an ocean goer, but they are their plates are very spiny.
Okay. Very pronounced.
Yeah. And there's a lot of oceanic sturgeon and paddle or in like the Chinese paddlefish we've talked about before.
Huh.
That have gone extinct relatively recently are so endangered, like green sturgeon and Atlantic sturgeon, that there could be a hidden species out there. And there's a lot of tropical sturgeon species.
Right. I mean, and it's the ocean we're talking about.
So we're just seeing those every once in a while. Which there are some that have that. I don't know. That's just one thought. One another one that's put out there is armored catfish. This is a gigantic armored catfish. So out of the top 7 or 8 freshwater giant species of fish,
yeah,
catfish holds 5 of those places.
Right, yeah. I mean, they turn into massive Volkswagens.
Mm-hmm. And there's armored catfish. There's a thing called a ripsaw catfish that has giant bladed chunks of body armor that come off it and look like fins running down its side. If you grab it, it will shred you.
Nice.
That's why they call it a ripsaw. And they get pretty big. They get like 4 or 5 feet.
Mm.
But then there are oceanic. I'm not sure if there's any oceanic armored catfish, but there's things called hardhead catfish, which have a giant dermal-like plate on their head.
Mm-hmm.
And they look like channel catfish, but they're silver, but their heads are like indestructible.
A little different, huh?
So,
like a pig's head.
And the catfish are one of the most distributed vertebrates naturally on the planet.
But
they live in coral reefs. Oh, yeah. There's thousands of species.
Really? There's saltwater catfish?
Thousands.
Why didn't I really know that?
I've just told you about our ironhead catfish and gaff top catfish.
I guess I wasn't making the connection. They were in the ocean.
Yeah.
Okay.
There's thousands of species of catfish.
I'm looking them up now, ocean catfish.
So what I'm getting at is if, you know, 7 or 5 of the 7 biggest freshwater species are catfish, imagine the playing ground of the ocean.
Hmm. Yeah, they could get pretty big, I'd imagine.
So, like I said, there's not really any evidence of an armored catfish living in the ocean, like the true armored catfish. But once again, the convergent evolution for one family of catfish did it.
Yeah. Why wouldn't
the oceanic catfish
version do it?
Because there's like gaff top catfish have really long, like flowy fins. They look like decorative fish.
Yeah.
And they have, they're serrated and spined on those long fins, and they leak like a milk venom through their skin. Poison.
Mm.
They're gross. It's
yummy.
You can go in the hospital really quick.
And it's the ocean. You know, we've only explored or map tracked. I don't know. We've only explored what 3% of it.
Yeah, and there's 4 species or 4 genuses of armored catfish.
Hmm.
Two separate groups. They are not related closely.
Yeah.
So for that convergent evolution thing, whales or catfish do that a lot.
So it could be done.
There's a lot of species of catfish.
The only thing I don't know about the side plate, you know, pseudo fin whatever they're seeing. I mean, I guess it could be a catfish, but I.
So that's what I'm saying is those plates that people are seeing are the armor plates, like a ripsaw catfish.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. But I just don't know if, I don't know. I mean, it could be. I just don't know if I subscribe to that.
Some people put out there that it's an extinct whale, like a Zeuglodon or a Belizmosaur, which are considered to be very, very primitive whales, much more crocodilian or snake-like, large teeth, and that maybe that they're being mistaken for this some way, shape, or form. I don't know. I can't see it personally.
Mm-hmm.
There's that the lumps are parts of this body. I can't get it. It's to me that some people think Belizmosaurs may have had scutes.
Ooh.
So like crocodiles and alligators.
Right. They're scutes on their back.
That they, you know, they basically convergent evolution because they were taking marine mosasaurs. They look like marine mosasaurs. They look like pliosaurs. They look like crocodilians. So maybe they, all those other animals developed bony plates in the skin. Maybe they did too. Mm. There's not a lot of evidence for that. That's kind of an old theory. We have a lot of primitive whale skeletons and fossils. Not a lot of that.
It would be wild if there was one that just had like crazy, just a freak, one freak whale.
I mean, there could be.
And very well.
Whales are also relatively new.
Yeah.
When we talk about time scales.
Uh-huh.
That's one where a lot of people that really argue against evolution kind of point at whales.
Like where'd they come from?
Yeah. Because I think it was not Anomalocaris, but Andriocetus was a little wolf-like animal that had hoofs that they say whales came from.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Very quickly, like 50 million years.
That's pretty fast moving.
Like a fox-sized hoofed carnivore.
To the largest thing on the planet.
The largest thing ever.
Hmm.
The largest animal ever.
Quite the stretch, huh?
Mm. There's always jokes like, I'm going to go search in the ocean for food, brother. Comes back. Vroom.
I found some.
Just talking. No, so, and then the one we've already been saying, Anomalocaris, or something from the Permian period, something ancient and stuff. Like, I don't know, what do you think?
Well, I mean, too, what if, again, the coelacanth being that cryptid that they rediscovered, you know, the ocean's so big and so vast, and we know these things, we have fossil evidence of them, this Anomalocaris creature, but... It's hard for me to believe that, you know, obviously everything goes extinct. You know, 99.9% of all animals on Earth went extinct. But to think something from its lineage or line didn't still make it or survive or, you know.
I was saying the Permian. It's not the Permian.
Cambrian is what you said.
The Cambrian. But I just said the Permian.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. Gotcha.
It's the Cambrian.
We knew what you meant at home, right, everybody?
I'm so sick, but.
We knew what you're talking about.
Like, if the hate emails aren't true, they don't hurt my feelings. That one would have hurt my feelings.
Because it was true.
Mm-hmm.
For me, it's hard to rule that out as being like, oh, it's not possible, or they're just all gone, so it couldn't be this. It's the ocean. We don't have anything, I don't know, pinned down, mapped. I don't know. We don't know
very
nothing.
Little.
We know nothing. We know more about space than we do ocean. We don't know nothing about space, which is wild to me. Why aren't we exploring it more? And because it's expensive too. But
yeah, you took words out of my mouth. Because it costs a lot. And it's a lot more dangerous. Keep in mind, it is a lot more dangerous than space travel.
Which is wild. You know, I don't know. It's just like a reflection on life itself. You know, it's real easy for you to go out and judge other people or explore other people or give other people advice or do anything for other people. But when you have to turn internally and search through yourself, we don't do it, just like the ocean. But we'll go out in the space and, oh yeah, well, space exploration, and you know, we'll take pictures of these planets from these probes we're sending millions of light years away and sending them back to Earth like it's possible.
Just so you know. And there's a little bit of argument on the time scale of this and stuff like that. It looks like the Cambrian. Okay, so keep my coelacanths.
Yeah.
67, 65 million years ago.
Uh-huh.
Last time they appeared was during, you know, right before the mass extinction of the dinosaurs.
Okay.
These guys supposedly went extinct 500 million years ago.
Okay. I mean, 67 million, 500. Who knows? What's the difference anymore? Because, again, we don't know where the fossil record even can be turned upside down, you know? They found a... I seen a video where they were finding, turning over these rocks on top of this mountain. There's, you know, the seashells.
Clams.
Yeah, clams and seashells under it. So, you know, what's that mean? Was that mountain underwater at some point? Obviously, but I'm saying, was it below sea level and then pushed up? Or was the water actually that high at one point? You know, did the earth flood and cover everything? You know, so it's hard to place things in a timeline for me, especially in the ocean. Because we don't even know when the ocean's been turned over on its head. You know, maybe some of that older stuff was a lot more recent than we thought, but it got turned over and buried in from some unforeseen mega earthquake. Who knows? I don't know. But you can't rule anything out, especially in the ocean.
It's the ocean.
I mean, I don't know. I do wish we were exploring. I don't know. There's a lot I wish as humanity we were doing more, like exploring the planet, exploring the ocean, exploring the better things for humanity rather than, you know, war and destruction and building new, you know, coastline property buildings for all
maybe
of us.
Maybe we'll do an episode of, there's some conspiracies around, because, you know, NASA did a lot of research into the deep ocean, right?
Yeah.
You know what? They stopped, like, all of a sudden.
Didn't they find something?
There's a lot of conspiracies around it. Strangeology. Somebody was just talking about this. You know, 3 or 4 weeks ago, I was talking about the giant deep ocean mat of organic life.
Yes.
That some people think's fish, some people think shrimp and all this.
Right.
Well, there's an idea going around, too, that it's like a gigantic cyanophore.
Oh, okay.
Like a cyanophore that's thousands of miles long sometimes, or hundreds of miles long.
Yeah.
And it's just feeding on everything dead on the ocean like a death blanket, you know, just a giant scavenger. But if it comes too shallow, it, like, causes a death event. Because it's just one giant stinging thing.
Oh, I understand what you're saying, yeah.
So if it gets into shallow waters or whatever.
Everything
is dead.
Touches it, yeah.
So they were talking about that, but maybe they, like, there's conspiracies they ran into something like that, and they didn't want to lead it back to the surface.
Hmm.
There's a creepypasta called We Didn't Know How, or The Ocean's Way Deeper Than We Thought.
Mm-hmm.
It's about that same thing where the false bottoms, because there are false bottoms.
Yeah. I just seen a video on it, like, 2 days ago. It's weird.
And it's called super saline, like, striations.
Mm-hmm.
So, or even temperature barriers cause this, where, like, some of these deep canyons will be producing heat from volcanic activity, mm-hmm. thermal vents, all that. But the ocean above them is still, like, 5 or 6 miles deep. So that's cold. So there's this thermocline boundary, where sediment will ride. And if you could walk down there, it would just look like dirt on the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And you could pump through it. They did that in the Meg movies. They talk about the thermocline.
Nice.
Where it's like in their capsules of life. So wrapping that back, if these are like little time capsules, not saying an actual anomalocaris,
mm-hmm.
but that lineage of animal.
Right.
Could exist in these like time capsules. And I'm a big believer that we talked about the one under the, I think Arabia, the largest lake in the world, is thousands of feet below the earth. Like, it's an underground lake that they went into one time and then they stopped all research with.
Yeah. Yeah, it's weird. That needs looked into.
Well, I think that there are these spots that are just time capsules, snapshots, and life is competitive with life.
Oh, yeah.
So, I don't know.
I mean, if you...
I'm sick and rambling.
If you got a body plan that works and it's effective... And, you know, there's no need in environmental change or reason to change it. And you're left undisturbed from humans for ever. Let's just put it that way. You might stick around. So I think we're the cause for most extinctions now.
Yeah. All right. I've been the great and sick mystery.
And I've been Jay.
Why don't you go ahead and hit that dark blue button?
You sure? Is that the right one?
No.
This one?
Yeah, I think it is.
Sound right?
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Hey, guys. Thank you for listening to Crypt of the Corn podcast. Remember, the best way to support the show is share it with a friend. But if you are craving more of the J clones
and more from Mr. E,
there's always extra content on Patreon
and our paid member space on cryptidsofthecorn.com.
We'll catch you next time with more exciting fun, and informative information.
Bye!